KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bowles, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. After nearly 50 years in federal prison, Leonard Peltier is free to go home. Outgoing President Joe Biden commuted the sentence of the Native American activist for his role in a 1975 shootout with FBI agents on the Pine Ridge Reservation. SDPB's Lee Stribinger has more.
Peltier will serve the remainder of his sentence in home confinement. The pardon was seen as the last chance to free Peltier from prison, who is 80 and is in poor health.
It was the right thing to do, and it took way too long for a president to realize that.
That's Rapid City-based lawyer Bruce Ellison, who represented Peltier in the original case 50 years ago. Ellison, who was 25 at the time, says there was conflicting evidence against Peltier.
Clemency was at least an appropriate remedy.
The move drew applause from groups like Amnesty International and condemnation from Republican Senate Majority Leader John Thune of South Dakota. Ed Woods is a retired FBI agent who runs the No Parole Peltier Association.
Whether he goes back to the reservation, he's in poor health. Jack and Ron are still dead, so Peltier has to live with the aging process just like the rest of us.
Gene Roach is a longtime Free Leonard Peltier activist who was there during the shootout in 1975. She was 14. The Minicoju Lakota says she's excited for Leonard to come home, but
our work is not done until all of our people are treated with the basic human rights that we all deserve.
NDN Collective, an indigenous rights organization, has purchased a home for Peltier on the Turtle Mountain Reservation, where he's enrolled. Biden's commutation takes effect on February 18th. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
The Navajo Nation hosted an inauguration watch party on Monday at the tribe's Washington, D.C. office. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin had planned to attend Donald Trump's swearing-in ceremony in person outdoors, but was among the thousands of people who had to change plans after the event was moved inside due to cold weather. Temperatures were in the 20s Monday morning as Nigrin and others watched the event on TV. Nigrin says some things that resonated with him in President Trump's speech were economic development and public safety.
And some of the things in terms of public safety really resonated with me as far as how do we make our communities safer, how do we continue to make sure that us as Americans feel safe in the communities that we live in. So as president, and I think as a tribal nation, tribal leader, definitely trying to make sure that promises kept on Indian country because we all deserve it.
Nigrin says the Navajo Nation is putting together a list of priorities to work on with the Trump administration. As to Biden granting Leonard Peltier's freedom, Nigrin says he was glad it happened. He recently signed a letter of support for Peltier's release.
It's a Native elder that is up in age, and it'd be good for him to see his homelands again, to really enjoy where he comes from and what he's fought for when he was a young man as well, and for him to be back with the animals, the land, and the waters. What brought him joy and happiness to really see him enjoy that is going to be wonderful for not only Indian country, but for himself as well, too. So very, very proud and happy that President Biden took him up on that, because I know that that's something that was needed for a very, very long time.
Peltier himself often wondered if he'd see the world outside prison walls. In this 2000 interview I did with him while he was in Leavenworth, Kansas, Peltier shared this statement should he die before gaining freedom.
Being an Indian, I'm very proud of my people, especially those that have made good lives for themselves and made big advances just to help our people survive and thrive as a government. And if possible, I'll see them in the ceremonies.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull at the KLCC Studios in Eugene, Oregon.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com. DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
President Trump is an ally to Alaska, and our economy really does rely on natural resources.
Alaska's congressional delegation cheers President Trump's action to boost energy production in the state. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, January 21st. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, Alaska lawmakers gavel in for the first day of the legislative session.
We have a very unique responsibility with the conditions that face our state. Lots of opportunities, of course, lots of challenges.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
President Donald Trump signed a pile of executive orders yesterday, including one focused on Alaska's energy production and natural resource development. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin is on the line to walk us through it. Hi, Liz.
Hey there.
So, Liz, tell us exactly what's in the president's executive order.
Oh, exactly would be hard, Wesley, because there is so much here. It covers nearly every controversial Alaska land use issue you can think of, from the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to the Tongass National Forest, the King Cove Road, the Ambler Road, you name it. In most of these areas, the order rescinds a Biden administration order or several and encourages development, whether it's mining, drilling, road building, and the like. The order also calls for revisiting whether Alaska tribes can put land in trust, which is a way for tribes to gain jurisdiction over their land rather than just own it. Depending on what happens with that review, that option might be off the table.
So with the president's signature, is all of this a done deal?
No, it'll take a long time to write regulations, and conservation groups are gearing up to sue over some or most of these. And some of these things aren't really in the purview of the president. Some require the industry to become more committed. For instance, the order says the government will prioritize a pipeline to bring natural gas from the North Slope. Alaska's been trying to get this gas pipeline for years, and the holdup is that it's expensive and no company has yet ponied up the money to make it happen.
So how did the order come about?
It is in large part a reaction to the 70 or so executive orders that President Biden issued relating to Alaska during his term. And each one of those orders infuriated Alaska's Republican leaders. They said the Biden administration was locking up Alaska. And Governor Dunleavy specifically asked the Trump transition team for a single executive order on Trump's first day in office to ditch all the Biden orders. And Dunleavy's team sent Trump's team a briefing book to say what the order should cover.
Well, it sounds like Alaska's Republican leaders didn't like the Biden administration's orders. How has the congressional delegation responded to the Trump administration's orders?
Yeah, I talked to Alaska Congressman Nick Begich today, and he is delighted.
President Trump won his election in Alaska by 13 points. I think people in Alaska recognize that President Trump is an ally to Alaska, and our economy really does rely on natural resources, whether that's oil and gas, mineral development in the form of base metals, precious metals, rare earths, critical minerals, timber. We're a resource state.
Both U.S. senators and the governor have also issued statements praising the order. But, of course, other Alaskans aren't happy at all. Some Alaskans worked for years to shield certain areas from development, and they feel like they've lost years of work. For them, this is going to be a long 4 years, and then they'll try to move the ball in the opposite direction.
So you laid out a ton of projects that the president has tried to sort of push through involved in Alaska. Does it say anything about the Pebble Mine?
No, it doesn't. At least it's not mentioned, at least not by name. And I'd say that's conspicuously absent.
So lastly, President Trump also signed a separate order yesterday that would revert Denali's name back to Mount McKinley. What are you hearing about that?
Well, as it happens, Alaska Survey Research has a new poll out saying Alaskans oppose the name change by a 2-to-1 margin. That was a poll of 1,800 Alaskans taken earlier this month after Trump floated the idea. The poll showed Alaska Republicans were more evenly split on changing the name back to McKinley, but on the whole, it's not popular. Alaskans tried for 50 years to change the name to Denali. Republican Governor Jay Hammond campaigned on it in the 70s, and the Alaska legislature officially asked to have the name changed to Denali. It was finally changed in 2015, and now Trump has ordered it changed back to honor President McKinley. And I should point out, no one in the Alaska delegation to Congress is celebrating this one. Senator Lisa Murkowski issued a statement saying that the name should stay Denali.
Well, that's Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin. Liz, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
State lawmakers convened in Juneau this afternoon to kick off the first session of the 34th Alaska Legislature. They'll spend the next 4 months or so debating bills and building the state budget. The first day always involves more pomp and circumstance than legislating, but leaders in the state Senate gathered reporters to share their priorities. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, says lawmakers will look to tackle a wide variety of issues.
Funding of education, focusing in on recruitment and retention of high-quality teachers and public employees. We want to talk about affordable and reliable energy, and then also election reform.
But they're facing stiffer opposition than over the past 2 years. The minority caucus has doubled to 6 Republicans, enough to guarantee seats on legislative committees. The 14-6 split gives the minority caucus a chance to block votes that require a three-quarters majority. But Senate Minority Leader Mike Schauer, a Wasilla Republican, says obstruction isn't on the immediate agenda.
We're not starting that way, because that's kind of working backwards to the front in the beginning. Our goal is to find common ground with the Senate majority, with the House majority and minority, and things that we can work on that we agree upon.
Meanwhile, a 21-member coalition made up of Democrats, independents, and 2 Republicans officially took power in the House. The new speaker, Dillingham independent Bryce Edgman, told the newly sworn in representatives there's a lot of hard work ahead.
We have a very unique responsibility with the conditions that face our states. Lots of opportunities, of course, lots of challenges, lots of areas to agree on, lots of areas to disagree on, lots of areas to find respectful common ground.
The House and Senate majorities are expected to be in alignment on some key issues, like boosting education funding and returning public sector workers to a pension system, but that's likely to set up conflict with Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy. Meanwhile, another subsea cable break has taken out internet across northern and western Alaska. The company behind the cable, Quintillion, says they're exploring options to restore service. Quintillion's president, Mac McHale, confirmed the break Saturday morning. He says sea ice and darkness has made it impossible to find the exact location of the cut, but that it likely occurred in the Beaufort Sea. Repairs to the subsea line would need to be performed by a specialized vessel, which McHale says isn't an option until late summer. In a press release, Quintillion says they're exploring other options to bring service back online. One is a terrestrial cable that would span more than 230 miles from Utqiagvik to Deadhorse, where a landline to Fairbanks already exists. Mikhail says the cable needed for such a route has already been purchased. He also calls on the incoming Trump administration to cut government red tape and, quote, eliminate bureaucratic obstacles, as such a project would require a number of permits from the Bureau of Land Management. Quintillion's subsea cable network stretches from Prudhoe Bay to Nome, with stops in Utqiagvik, Wainwright, Point Hope, and Kotzebue along the way. Plans to expand the network south to Homer are underway, but are not expected to be operational until 2027. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Northwest Arctic residents honor Inupiaq healer Della Keats.
The way she interacted with people was just amazing to watch. She had a healing spirit, and she healed a lot of people.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Former Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson has been appointed as manager of the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. Bronson, a former Air Force and commercial airline pilot, served as Anchorage mayor from 2021 to 2024 when he lost his reelection bid to Suzanne LaFrance. His term was marked with numerous allegations of mismanagement and unethical behavior. In a statement, State Transportation Commissioner Ryan Anderson said Bronson has a deep understanding of Alaska's aviation needs and will help further strengthen the airport as a critical hub for Alaskans and global commerce. The Anchorage Airport is the second busiest cargo hub in the country, behind Memphis's airport, and ranks among the top five worldwide. In a statement, Bronson said he was honored to manage the Anchorage Airport. He's set to start in his new position on January 27th. Meanwhile, the Alaska Department of Health confirmed a measles case in an adult on the southern Kenai Peninsula last week. An unvaccinated adult developed symptoms of the extremely contagious but preventable viral infection earlier this month while traveling to Alaska from overseas. South Peninsula Hospital reported through a press release Friday the patient went to Homer Medical Center before receiving care at the hospital's emergency department. The infected person flew from Seattle to Anchorage during the afternoon and evening, around the same time multiple flights were leaving for the Southeast Alaska region. So the city and borough of Juneau is also warning residents of the potential for exposure. State epidemiologist Joe McLaughlin says the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine can significantly lower the risk of contracting the virus.
The measles component of that vaccine is one of the most effective vaccines on the planet. It's about 97% effective at preventing measles.
Public health nurse Tammy Marsters says early measles symptoms are similar to cold and flu symptoms.
Measles typically starts with a fever, runny nose, cough, red eyes, and a sore throat, which of course is what everything else starts with, right? And then it's followed by a rash. Most frequently, that starts on the face and descends to the trunk and limbs.
Marsters says measles symptoms usually start to appear 8 to 12 days after exposure to measles. A rash typically shows 10 to 14 days after exposure. People are generally infectious 4 days before and after a rash appears. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, measles is highly contagious and can quickly spread in populations where more people are unvaccinated. Because measles can be potentially life-threatening, the CDC recommends vaccinating to prevent outbreaks. In 2024, 40% of reported measles cases in the U.S. resulted in hospitalizations for treatment or isolation. Marsters says complications are most common in children under 5 years, adults over 20 years, immunocompromised people, and pregnant people. She says the best way to protect yourself is to get the vaccine.
Vaccinate. And if you're sick, stay home. And if you feel that you were exposed, watch yourself carefully for signs and symptoms.
She says to call a provider ahead of time before seeking care at a clinic. And thousands of Alaska's public sector employees have been waiting for their retirement contributions to be processed since a hacking attempt last November pushed state systems offline. KCAW's Meredith Reddick reports on how the delay has affected teachers and government workers in Sitka.
In early November, Alaska's Office of Information Technology identified suspicious activity on Division of Retirement and Benefits servers. The state shut down servers to avoid a data breach. Forrest Wolf is the legislative liaison for the Alaska Department of Administration. He says the shutdown damaged servers, and that damage prompted the division to move all programs and applications to more secure remote servers.
Instead of going through the whole process of trying to rebuild a whole bunch of used servers and stuff, they just decided, hey, we'll go ahead and move it all over to the cloud, like they had planned to do already.
One program, which is used by 137 agencies around the state to process retirement contributions, stopped working after the transition.
And then it was discovered that there were some issues with the format that it was in prior that needed to be upgraded.
That means that employers around the state, including the Sitka School District and City and Borough of Sitka, have not been able to use that program to send employee retirement contributions to the state since early November. Mike Vieira is a career and technical education instructor at Sitka High School. He says $2,300 in contributions have been deducted from his paycheck since November, but that money has not been deposited into his account.
And the big concern about this is that for now, going on 3 months, we've lost our time in the market on these contributions.
By the end of January, when the state estimates that systems will be running again, he says that number will be close to $3,500. That's money that would have been growing over the past 3 months. For Vieira, who is 12 years from retirement, losing 3 months of growth now would mean a long-term impact to his retirement savings. Vieira says teachers and public sector employees already face an uphill battle without defined benefits in retirement.
You pile this on top of it, where you're a whole quarter out of the market with your contributions. It just doesn't give you much confidence in the state that they're going to really allow you to retire with security and dignity and be able to live, you know, for the rest of your life.
It's unclear whether employees will have a remedy. Vieira points to a 2023 Alaska statute stating that employees are entitled to lost interest if contributions are not deposited within 15 days. Wolf says the state is awaiting guidance from the Department of Law and tax consultants on whether that statute will apply to the state. Wolf says the state has provided employers with a temporary workaround process, which requires both employers and the state to manually enter contributions. As of January 17, just over half of those employers were using that process, according to state data. Melissa Weilman is the Public and Government Relations Director for the City and Borough of Sitka. She says the city is not currently using the state's temporary process and is holding employee contributions until the server is functioning again.
Our representative advised against using the manual system, stating that the city is just too complex. However, based on our understanding, other communities are using the manual entry system, but it sounds like we're just too complicated for that.
The Sitka School District is also not using the workaround. Vieira says the district has struggled to get help from the state to implement the manual system. The state expects the tool to be fully operational by the end of January, Wolf says. At that point, employers who have not been using the manual process will have to enter backlogged contributions. In Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. You can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. Every year, hundreds of nonprofits provide warm meals, safe places, and resources to hundreds of thousands of Alaskans. By supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD, you're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. This year, make more possible with the click of a button. Don't forget to give via PickClick Give when you apply for your PFD. This message sponsored by PickClick Give.
The Aleut community of St. Paul Island announced Friday that it has signed an agreement with the federal government aimed at jointly managing the waters surrounding the Bering Sea Island. Tribal Council President John Melavidov says the agreement with the National Marine Fisheries Service is a step towards environmental stewardship through a partnership between the tribe and the federal government. It's also a recognition of the Onungas people's historical connection to the region.
It's really the start
of working together on matters, you know, related to sustainable management and stewardship of marine resources under NIMPS jurisdiction surrounding St. Paul.
Federal appointees administer the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is run by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Melavidov says this agreement protects the conservation work they've done under the outgoing administration of former President Joe Biden against possible changes under President Donald Trump. The agreement outlines a framework for managing marine resources, including the inclusion of tribal proposals and knowledge in fisheries policies. Its implementation will require coordination with other entities, including the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and the state of Alaska, to ensure compliance with federal and state laws. Meanwhile, Donald Trump was sworn in as president of the United States on Monday in Washington, D.C. The transfer of power has been a topic of conversation throughout the country, including in Kenai. KDLL's Hunter Morrison spoke to Kenai Walmart grocery shoppers about their thoughts on the new administration and has this audio postcard.
He's got some good ideas, I think, controlling the influx across the border, illegals. I'm okay with legals coming in. And because we need workers.
So I'm optimistic, I'm cautiously optimistic, I should say, about this new administration. And I hope that they can follow through with a lot of the things they're talking about.
And I'm just very, very concerned. I'm very concerned about the economy, obviously. I'm very, very concerned about conservation efforts to save our planet. And locally, I'm very concerned.
I think that it's about time that we got somebody in office that can probably make a better life for the people that live in this country and not just put other people from other countries first.
I'm really disappointed on how the things have become. I'm afraid that our rights are going to be taken away.
It's a dark day for our country, and I'm not looking forward to the next 4 years, to be honest with you.
I don't understand his values. I just don't understand them. I can't adhere to them. It goes against the very essence of my ability to be a compassionate human being to say that I support him.
I think I like his no-nonsense attitude. And I believe he cares about the country and plans to do what's right for it.
I just dislike the way he treats women, the way he treats minorities, the way he treats anyone who isn't a billionaire. I like it that he's a businessman. He may be a little cocky, but that's okay. He's confident, but he has a right to be.
Offices across the country were closed on Monday in observance of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the federal holiday that honors the civil rights icon. But in the Northwest Arctic, the day also honors an icon, Inupiaq healer and midwife Della Keats, whose work in traditional medicine built the foundation for tribal doctor programs across Alaska. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
Della Keats, you might be familiar with the name. The University of Alaska Anchorage has two programs named in her honor for rural or Alaska Native students pursuing careers in healthcare. The Alaska Federation of Natives recognizes healthcare providers with their Della Keats Healing Hands Award. In 2009, Keats was inducted into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. But for Eli Booth, she has a more important title.
Della Keats was my great-grandmother, my mom's mom's mom.
Keats passed away when Eli was 11. He remembers her as the kindest person he's known. He says she always kept her door open, welcoming in people who were sick or hurting and helping them if she was able.
The way she interacted with people was just amazing to watch. You know, she had a healing spirit, and she healed a lot of people.
Largely self-taught, Keats walked into worlds, combining traditional and Western medicine. She was born in a sod house on the Noatak River in 1907 and learned from anatomy books and from processing caribou and other animals. She began practicing medicine in her 20s and worked as a midwife, helping women deliver babies. A large part of her knowledge came from listening to older generations. Here's Keats speaking in a video produced by the Alaska Medical Library.
You should learn and ask around what the things they do long time ago in early days, what they used for healing from your parents, because your parents learned something from their parents before white people came.
A midwife who Keats trained delivered another Booth, Eli's cousin Stephen Booth, in Keats's log cabin in Noatak. Keats was Stephen Booth's great aunt. He says he regrets not spending more time with her while she was alive.
I was too young to realize that I could learn from her.
Stephen went on to become a certified nurse, but felt like something was missing.
One elder man said, you're not helping us, you're just giving us meds and stuff like that. We need help with our body. And there was a tribal doctor position open, so I filled out and got a job with them.
After training, Stephen worked for 2 decades as a tribal doctor for South Central Foundation, an Anchorage-based Alaska Native healthcare organization. Tribal doctors use traditional practices and remedies rather than relying solely on Western medicine. Although Stephen couldn't learn from Keats directly, he said he learned from watching videos of her teaching methods, especially the ones related to touch and massage.
Put his little third finger right here on the middle, like this.
Many of these videos of Keats were filmed by the Manelic Association as training material when they started their tribal doctor program in the 1970s.
Your fingers, yeah.
Stephen says he also learned other aspects of traditional healing from these videos and other tribal doctors. This included the use of medicinal tundra plants such as willow, sourdough, and stinkweed, also known as wormwood. Adequate sleep, an active lifestyle, laughing, and a healthy diet incorporating Alaska Native foods were also foundations of traditional health and healing. But above all else, Stephen says faith is most important.
They trust in God. They know that the Lord is the healer. He just uses our hands if we're willing.
Keats would also incorporate prayer into checkups. Cheryl Richards is the only full-time tribal doctor for a Manelic Association. Although she says she never met Keats personally, Richards is thankful for her role in establishing the program that she now leads. Richard says the tribal doctor program just started up again after a several-year break during the pandemic, and she hopes it will remain strong for years to come.
My goal is to one day retire and look back and say, this program's going to survive. It's going to thrive.
And Richard says in order for the program to thrive, she hopes, like Keats, she can pass her knowledge to younger generations. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Eric Stone and Clarice Larson in Juneau, Ben Townsend in Nome, Jamie Deep in Homer, Meredith Reddick in Sitka, Theo Greenlee in St. Paul, Hunter Morrison in Kenai, and Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Tim Rocky is our producer. And I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare.
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.
The one. ground, hundreds of miles down. First thing that rises in your mind when you awake, spending you till you break. Let me hold you now, baby. Close your eyes, don't open till the morning light, baby. Don't care, you haven't lost it all. Yeah. Don't know what's made up till the one thing that you want is coming with the dawn and suddenly.
Turned around with that whole man.
Why do I feel stupid and I come undone? Well, I come undone.
Yeah.
worked 9 to 5. It takes conviction, it takes a will to survive. I'm not somebody who commits the crime and leaves the scene, but when I've been dissed, I don't spend much time on what might happen. I'm not about self-pity. You love it.
Your lipstick marks still on your coffee cup. Oh, yeah. Got a fist of pure emotion. Got a head of shattered dreams. Gotta leave it all behind now. Whatever I said, whatever I didn't mean it. I just want you back for good. Sing it, you'll be right and understood.
Want you back, want you back.
I want you back, back for good. Unaware but underlined, I figured out the story.
No, no,
wasn't good.
No, no.
But in a corner of my mind,
corner of my mind,
I celebrated glory.
That was not to be.
In the twist of separation, you excelled at being free. Can't you find, a little room inside for me? Whatever I said, whatever I did, I didn't mean it. I just want you back for good.
Want you back, want you back.
See, I want you back for good. Sing it, you'll be right and understood.
Want you back, want you back.
I want you back, girl. And we'll be together.
time that you came back for good. This old wheel keeps on
dust fly up off the truck tires down a dirt road in Nashville in the summertime in 1996. I was listening to my dad and Johnny Cash doing Chain Gang and talking trash with Savannah and smoking cigarettes. But it wasn't that long till I tasted the salt of the sea, that she was still in love with the guy she left for me. So she stood there crying as I packed my pack, and I knew that I was lying when I said that I'd be back.
So he's all rolling down the road. His own wheel keeps on rolling down the road.
Now, fast forward to about 2003. I'm standing on the corner of Hollywood and Vine, just a six string and me in that Capitol building, looking up at that thing, wondering when am I gonna get my chance to sing. But faced with that kind of predicament, it'd be pretty hard not to get choked up when every hero I had has died and every band I had broke up. I'm invited to a party and I just can't come, cause I know that once I'm in, I can't pull out till I'm
done.
Last 9 or 10, old Apu waltzed in, put a slimy gun to my head and said, son, this is the end. I said, you better get back, I got an army of good friends who would follow me to hell, and I've done the same for them. Besides, you're not gonna destroy what we work so hard to defend. We protect the things we love, just like our families did. We picked a long and winding course, and we do it again. We picked a dark horse, and we're gonna ride it to the end.
It's all rolling down the road.
To you, if you're
asking, do I love you this much? Well, I do. My world.